Good evening. It's Sunday, September 17th, 2023. Coming up, well, Lafayette is known to be one of the top school districts in the Bay Area. Teachers say their compensation is among the lowest, and they're asking for more.
I am married, and my husband has a great job, but we still can't afford to live here, and we still can't afford just my paycheck and his paycheck. I have to have a second job.
And as September is Latinx Heritage Month, two Bay Area filmmakers prepare to bring their film, A Song for Caesar, about the late Cesar Chavez, who helped form the United Farm Workers Labor Union, to PBS later this month.
Señor Chavez, his dreams, his hopes, his desires, his work will live as long as we who are alive keep it alive.
I'm Sharon Sabota, and you're listening to the Weekend Evening News. Parents, students, caregivers, and morning commuters likely couldn't help noticing a few dozen teachers and just as many students, parents, and passersby joining in with them carrying signs during morning drop-off this week at Lafayette Elementary School. In spite of Lafayette School District's reputation as one of the best in the state and the county, the teachers say their pay is among the lowest. They've rejected the district's offer of a 12% raise, saying that even the 14% raise that they are proposing is a good faith effort that will move them in the right direction, but will still not make them even with their peers in the district. I spoke with several of the picketers last week.
My name is Christy Gingrich. I am a third grade teacher, and I am our Lafayette Education Association president. And so I'm here to represent all teachers in the district and to help retain and hire teachers for the success of our students.
Tell me what your sign says.
My sign says Lafayette teachers have the lowest career earnings in the county. And if you were to work your whole life in Lafayette, you would have a total income not competitive with anyone else in the community.
And the irony is that this is one of the more expensive communities to live in the county.
And the teachers, the parents support us, and the parents passed a tax parcel with the intent to help hire and retain teachers in Lafayette, and unfortunately that money hasn't surfaced on our salary schedule. So we are trying to just keep ourselves competitive because we are losing teachers. We had to hire 50 teachers this year, which is really rare in a community like Lafayette. And so parents are aware, and they are supporting us, as you can see, and they're asking the district to please prioritize teachers over other things for the success of our students, because teachers drive are the drivers of the classroom, and we've had a lot of success through the years, but we definitely need to compete with Orinda, Moraga, and neighboring communities.
And I work for East Bay Express, where also that, like, Oakland School District is located in the East Bay. Alameda, all these other, Concord is over here. Some people would say, well, compared to these other school districts, you all are doing great. What would you say?
Well, the facts speak for themselves. We actually are not, we are one of the lowest paid in the county. Right now we're part of a coalition of teachers, and we, Piedmont and almost every district in the community, in the local community, is in our coalition, and we are actually the lowest paid currently in the entire coalition of 19,000. So I think people need to look at the facts and not, it's misinformation to think that we are well paid because we teach in Lafayette.
And the reputation that Lafayette has is that it's one of the top districts.
It is
in the
one
county.
Of the top districts. Yeah, we are one of the top districts.
So what do you make of that disparity between that reputation and what the teachers who are providing that quality education
is? We're just hoping for them to offer us a salary that we can be competitive for the success of our continued success of our students. We really believe that it's our students that we are fighting for, and that we want to make sure that we can retain these wonderful teachers and attract new teachers to our community. There's a teacher shortage, and we're competing with everyone else. And unfortunately, new educators look at salary as an option of where they want to work.
What keeps you here?
The community, these families, these kids.
Any message you want to say to the people on the other side of the bargaining table?
Just, for the continued success of our students, we just are looking for a competitive salary schedule.
Scott Moe is a fifth grade teacher who's been in the district for 27 years. I asked him to break down the numbers for us.
My sign says attract and retain the best teachers for our students. And on the back, we talk about where if we were to receive our raise and the districts around us are to receive the raise that we know that they're going to get, it would put us second to last or last in the district. So the district had sent out some information showing how we would be first, and we would be first until the other districts settle, and then we're going to be right back down again. So,
and then people who are listening to this won't be able to see the numbers. Can you just go over what these numbers mean really quickly?
Right, so people, our brand new teachers on the first step on our salary schedule would be, it would put us second to last compared to Orinda, Moraga, and Piedmont.
And they'd be earning around a little under $65,000.
A little, yes, $64,530. Somebody kind of in the middle with a bachelor's and 45 units at step 10, that's 10 years of service, would be at $83,000 compared to $89,91 for Orinda and Piedmont and $80,000 for Moraga, which would put us second to last. People at the very last step, meaning the teachers who've been here the longest, the teachers who only get a raise when it's negotiated versus another year of experience, would put us last at $115,000. And Orinda's at $124,000, and it only takes them 20 years to get there. It takes us 25 years to get here. And then when we hire a teacher who's coming from another district, maybe they just moved here or they want to transfer districts, all the other districts around us either have no cap or negotiating to have no cap. We will be capping ours at 15 years. So if we were to get a teacher coming with 20 years of service, they would lose 5 years of pay in coming here versus other districts where they could come with all of their years of service.
And you're one of the teachers, one of the many teachers who doesn't live in this community, who commutes in. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I've taught here for 27 years. My students, luckily, my children were luckily able to go here because I teach here. But my wife and I are both teachers. We can't afford to live in this community, even though we're the ones who help make the property taxes so high because of our great schools. And I'm proud to be a Lafayette teacher. I love teaching here. We just want to get what is fair and commiserate with the districts around us.
Lindsay McCormick is a reading specialist.
This is my fourth year in the district. Not all of my years were transferred over when I came here, so that is one of the pieces to our contract negotiation. We're in agreement so far with the district on that piece. However, the district is not bringing our raise up to the cost of living increase that we've seen and been given by the state over the past 3 years.
And what do you want parents to know about the way that teachers in this community that's very esteemed for the quality of education that it provides, what do you want them to know about what it might be like to be a teacher here?
Every teacher I speak with here loves their students, loves their community, wants to stay here more than anything. But when you see that you can get paid $30,000 more just by going to a neighboring district, it starts really making us prioritize our family's needs versus our professional needs.
Janine Smith stood alongside the teachers with her children who attend Lafayette Elementary School and Stanley Middle School.
I support the teachers and advocate for them having higher salaries because they do such a great job to teach our students.
Sometimes people in other counties think, well, this district, the kids are doing really well. It's an affluent community. They've got enough. What do you say to that?
I would like to see all teachers make a great living no matter where they live.
I also spoke with two of the teachers' aides who stood alongside their higher paid colleagues.
I'm Vanessa Gonzalez, and I have been at LES for 2 years.
Your peers who are the credentialed educators in the teachers' union, they are asking for a 14% raise as opposed to a 12% raise. What's your take?
I think they should get it 100%. And it's, if you do ask around, a lot of teachers, they don't live by themselves. They live with roommates or significant others or with their parents.
My name is Viata Sadiapan. I actually work at Lafayette Elementary, and these are some of the hardest working teachers I've ever met. And they deserve the money, and they deserve being recognized for all the hard work and effort they put into our children here in the city.
Something was passed that just makes
We're part of the classified, not the credentialed, so we just got a livable wage, but before it was not even matching a livable wage within Contra Costa County.
Oh my God! May I ask you, what does a livable wage mean for you? What are you all?
Oh gosh, I mean, well, a lot of aides weren't breaking $20, you know, earlier, so now they finally are.
They get at least $20.
Yes, I mean, you could work at In-N-Out and make more money.
In a written statement, Superintendent Brent Stevens said the district remains committed to ensuring that Lafayette teachers are paid competitively. He said also that the current offer of 12% is, quote, very strong and will result in meaningful pay increases for teachers. Stevens added, we remain committed to ongoing dialogue with teachers. We see that no one, especially our students, would benefit from a strike. We're still working on this and remain optimistic. Similarly, the teachers that I spoke with remain optimistic and also hope to avoid a strike. However, they say 12% just simply isn't enough, which means the two sides of the negotiating table may be at an impasse. The district has scheduled a virtual town hall meeting for Monday night to further discuss the issue. And you're listening to the Weekend Evening News on KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. When Abel Sanchez wrote, produced, and sang a song for Caesar, along with Jorge Santana, some 20 years ago, he was unknowingly building the scaffolding for something that would become much bigger.
It was said somewhere along the line, beware of a movement that sings, because that's the music is what lifts everything.
I want you to take out everybody in those fields.
Since that, he lived his life with farm workers.
Senior champions, his dreams, his hopes, his desires, his work will live as long as we who are alive keep it alive.
We were in the studio when we wrote this song, and it came about as a result of kind of feeling like Cesar Chavez's spirit had entered into the studio. It wasn't intention to do a documentary, but after we finished the song, people heard it. They loved it. It was received really well, and we were grateful for that. But at the same time, people started saying, you know what? You should put some footage, some video to the song. I said, well, that's a great idea, but I don't know how to do that. I'm a musician.
That's when he paired up with Andres Alegria to convert the song into a music video.
This was a very sort of spontaneous kind of improvised project. And I put video to the 6-minute song. And we turned it into a DVD. We did some interviews with some people related to the United Farm Workers. And we created a DVD that we donated to the Cesar Chavez Foundation.
Sanchez says the song tells a story that's important, timeless, and relatable across generations.
The song is basically about Caesar's vision when, you know, I knew the history of Cesar Chavez and the farm worker movement and had a lot of passion, compassion for what those people go through, struggle, the farm workers and their families. And Caesar being the hero that he was and Dolores Huerta, somehow, you know, I was thinking about the theme of the song was about that, about the somewhat the oppressed or underserved people. And the theme of the song is about that, to, you know, equality and trying to share the message that everybody deserves equal treatment and better condition, you know, just decent conditions, you know. And that's what the theme of the song was, the lyrics. That's what I wrote. And it happened so fast. I mean, I didn't intend on doing that, but somehow that's why I say I feel the spirit of Cesar Chavez entered when I was doing the lyrics. And the next thing you know, we're on that mission.
He relates to it by virtue of his coal mining roots.
I worked in music. I transferred at one point to raise my family, got off the road and got a job with the government, and was involved in I was an equal employment opportunity investigator, working in civil rights department. And that, you know, really made me aware of that equality, you know, and equal rights, civil rights, if you will. And then my family too, I come from a family, that were coal miners. So I had that affinity for the cause, you know, of people that are working a very hard job and not really getting treated, you know, for the sacrifice and the kind of work they do. And I think that's what the core fiber for me that hits home.
When Sanchez and Alegria showed their work to Maya Angelou, their project got even bigger.
We had done some interviews for the DVD, and, you know, it kind of made sense to maybe take this somewhere else. And Abel showed the video to Maya Angelou. And Maya Angelou very clearly said that this is something that had to be taken to the next step, to the next level. And that's what we did.
And when people watch it, what do you want them to take away from it? And kind of who is your key audience, or do you want it to be a catch-all?
On a certain level, it's a catch-all. It definitely speaks directly to people who are aware of the movement and who were involved in either the farm workers movement or other movements along the ways, 60s and 70s. It speaks to them directly because it resonates on a lot of different levels in terms of their experiences and brings together what the key point of the film is, which is how arts and social movements work together. And so it definitely speaks to them. But we're also, you know, want to reach young people, younger people who did not experience that and who are just, you know, coming into their own today. And as a historical document that describes what happened and how that movement developed during that time period, a time period that was very exciting and where a lot of things were happening, but also that can serve as an example for them of how they can use their talents, whatever their talents may be, to move forward any social issues that they're aware of and want to become involved in. I mean, I think that it's very difficult for people to figure out exactly how to become involved in social change. And this is a great example. What happened with the farm workers and artists and musicians, et cetera, is a great example of how people can get involved in social movements to enact social change.
There's a phrase of like, when you can put a song with a movement, then it becomes something, then it has power. I would love to hear from both of you why you think that's important. What's the role of music in keeping a social movement alive?
You know, for me, like you say, with a song and a movement, first of all, there's a line in the movie that was said by Chuy Barea. It says that you can learn the truth from a song. And I believe that in my own experience, and I think in everybody's experience, we've learned some forms of the truth in songs that we relate to, whether it be about love, whether it be about social conditions, you know. And I think that's very important, just like the arts. In a painting, you can learn the truth. You can see a truth. And I love that. And for me, the truth of our film, one of the fibers, like Andres touched on, is the fact of for new generations to see the power of that movement or a movement, and how the farm workers, a lot of people aren't aware of what the farm workers do. You know, they think that, you know, the food just comes from wherever, you know, the shelves at Safeway, right? Not realizing what they're eating and nourishing on. And so this story tells, we were able to show once again what this farm workers went through and still go through today. So that form of, treatment, better treatment and respect and honoring and acknowledging and appreciating what the farm workers do for our society. And to me, that's the core, the real, you know, message that I think developed, but something we can teach, you know, or wake up people in that respect, you know, along with the other things of any social movement in general.
And while there may be an abundance of films about social movements, Allegra says there aren't enough, in his view, that look at them through a lens of the arts.
We knew that other films have been made about the farm workers, and films have been made about individual musicians and individual artists. But the one film that hadn't been made was this film, how artists, musicians, actors, writers, painters, worked with the farm workers, and generally how they work with social movements. That film has not been made. And so, you know, at that point, once we realized that, then it was clear that we needed to do this.
One of my first interviews at KPFA was with Dolores Huerta, and I made the mistake of saying to her, you know, what was it like to help Cesar? And she corrected me quickly. And I promised her that anytime that he's being talked about, I'll always ask this question. So I have to, because she feels sometimes like she gets left out of the narratives. What's your thought process around that? And maybe how did that inform your decision to include her voice in the film? Just sharing that question because of my promise to Dolores.
In terms of Dolores, she was involved from early on with this project. She was one of the first interviews that we did. And she's, you know, Cesar passed away in the 90s. Dolores, who is now, you know, 92, 93 years old, she's still been going strong all these years and was, you know, a very important person to talk to at the very beginning of our project, because she did. She gave us a sort of a framing of how to look at the farm workers, how to look at Cesar, and how to look at the movement. You know, she made it clear to us that Cesar saw himself not as a leader of the Chicano movement, not a leader of the Chicano people. He saw himself as a labor organizer, as the leader of a union. And she clearly described him as a person who dedicated his life to farm workers and to the needs of farm workers. And that just put really in a clear perspective for us how to present the issue of the farm workers movement in this film. That it really is about people who are doing hard work and who are doing important work and who deserve to be treated right.
The pair say bringing a song for Cesar to life was a labor of love that was 15 years in the making.
When we connected, that was in about 2005, I believe. And then 2006, by then we had already finished that 6-minute piece together, the kind of a music video thing of the song. And from there, we started the journey of, after Maya Angelou's order, you're going to do this film. You guys need to do this film, you know. And she brilliantly said, it's not just you and Andres' song, you know, it's my song. It's the little boy over here, little girl, all the, you know, she expressed like how many young folks, you know, is their song also. And that was the impetus to start. And that was in about 2006, 2007. And so we started our journey, and it progressively picked up. But you're looking at, we finished it maybe a couple of years ago now, pretty much close to finish. And at that point, and that, you know, it was just a kind of became a work of love. You know, we did it on our own dime, our own time over the years, you know, and getting in a two-man band. We were a two-man band basically for a lot of years, getting in the car. Andres would get his equipment together and we'd get together and I'd go down. We'd go to LA, we'd go wherever to interview whoever it was. And so there was a lot of different elements of work as I look back on it over the years that we collaborated on. And it was just a good partnership that, you know, evolved into something that, like you said, Andres, said, we really wanted to inspire and young folks today to see that, you know, we're passing the baton and say, look, you can do something too with your art, your talent, whatever it is, whatever your skills may be, for the betterment of society if you can.
That's co-directors of the film A Song for Cesar, Abel Sanchez, and Andres Alegria. A Song for Cesar will premiere on PBS on Friday, September 29th, and will repeat the next day, September 30th. For more information about the film or to find a screening near you, you can visit their website at www.songforcesar.com. Blues artist and 2023 Blues Grammy nominee Johnny Bergen and a makeshift band comprised of a California-based bass player and drummer made their way to the Bay to the small, unmarked Berkeley venue, Monkey House, with a capacity of just 50 people. Bergen says it was a long time coming, but he is and will always be a blues man.
I was in high school, like in the late 80s, and I was taking guitar from this blues guitarist. At that point, I was in Greenville, South Carolina. I saw a lot of great blues artists. But once I got to Chicago, went to a black blues club on the west side and saw a Tail Dragger, I realized I had to start all over, and I was nowhere near. I thought I was good. I had to throw everything in the garbage can and start all over and really focus and learn that way, like the way an anthropologist would learn. Because really, I'm a guest in the house of black music. I mean, and I had to learn it that way. And then trying to understand it culturally and experience it culturally as best as possible was really, it turned me inside out and made me come at it in a different way. And, you know, 30 years later, here, you know, I graduated from college and I thought I'll try this for a year. I was just making it, you know, playing my little gigs. And
did you have a day job?
No.
So you've always been like full-time
mostly
musician.
I quit music for 8 or 9 years. Other than that, I've always played music.
And what did you do for the 8 or 9 years?
Oh, I did some sales things and did a little things like that. And anyway,
you
I finally
got called back into it.
I got called back into music and I'll never turn back. And yeah. I got a pass to come back. And, but I wouldn't want to test it again. But, you know, the blues fans are so loyal. I mean, the same DJs, they remember me when I came back. And, I mean, I got a big article in a Dutch blues magazine as soon as I came back. Hey, Johnny's back and all that. And I did this big festival up there, you know, just because they were happy I was back. And so the fans are real supportive, and that's what keeps me going on the road and keeps me doing this, is connecting with the people. And if I see a lot of the same people, and you know, it's family, or it's a real community,
yeah.
And it's nice to bring new people in as best I can.
Bergen's bass player weighed in about the show and the venue.
My name's Chris Matthews. We are here at the Monkey House in Berkeley on tour with the Johnny Bergen Band. I am the bass player, and we are having a great time.
How did you feel playing at this venue?
Oh, I love it. It's small, and it's got great lighting, which most venues don't. And so it's nice to be in a place with some lighting, you know? I think we got to get back up there now.
All right, thank you.
To learn more about Johnny Bergen's music or partake in one of his guitar lessons, you can visit www.johnnybergen.com. To learn more about the Monkey House and the upcoming boutique shows, you can visit www.monkeyhouse.org. And the weather. In the San Francisco Bay Area, partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 60s, partly sunny tomorrow with highs in the 70s. In the central San Joaquin Valley, partly cloudy with lows in the 60s tonight, mostly sunny with highs in the mid-80s tomorrow. That's it for tonight's news. Thanks to Radha Keel for being our technical producer, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. I'm Sharon Sabota. Good evening.